Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 24,768, the NASDAQ at 73,98, and the S&P at 27,22. Our topic tonight is accessible legal considerations for small businesses and nonprofits. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always call in, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio for us. So let's start with our topic. The topic, again, is accessible legal considerations for small businesses and nonprofits. My guest this evening is attorney Mark Arend. Mark has practiced law in the Lehigh Valley for almost 30 years, assisting nonprofit organizations and for-profit businesses. Mark recently created Greater Good LLC, a virtual law practice structured specifically to provide affordable, accessible, and quality legal services to nonprofit organizations, small businesses, and entrepreneurs. Being an entrepreneur himself now. Prior to forming Greater Good, Mark was a shareholder of the Allentown law firm Davison & McCarthy, and prior to that, he was a shareholder with Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Lori. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming in. This is a very intriguing endeavor, but so let's start first by kind of introducing yourself to the listeners. Tell a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background and history and what brought you here today.
Sure. So, as you described, I have been a lawyer in the Lehigh Valley for a good number of years, and that included a stint as a law clerk for Judge Carol McGinley in Lehigh County, and then on to Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, and then subsequent to that, Davison & McCarthy. And I sort of ended up with Greater Good in a travel over many years. Many of us, when we go to law school, have the notion that we'd like to help people as we come out with our law school taught skills. But sometimes we get onto different paths, and a common path for law students is to end up in law firms. And while you can certainly help people in that context, sometimes you feel like maybe there's more you could do in a different kind of a way. So after many years of thinking about that, trying to emphasize nonprofits and small businesses in my law firm practice, I felt over time that wasn't the best model within which to provide those services. Nonprofits and small businesses really need affordable legal services. They need predictability. Oftentimes they're working with tight resources and tight budgets, and open-ended hourly work from a law firm typically doesn't serve them very well. So I was trying to figure out models of business that would better serve those communities, and ultimately came up with Greater Good, which is, as you said, a virtual law practice. So I've sort of ditched the big office. I've ditched the substantial staff. I've ditched the computer networks and the phone networks and the record storage and all that kind of stuff that creates extra overhead and cost. And we're very trim and lean. So I work out of my home and out of public places and client offices. I do not have support staff. I save my documents on the cloud. We're trying to use all the mechanisms of current technology that we can to provide much more cost-effective services for nonprofits and small businesses.
Well, it sounds like a great endeavor, but, you know, going back for a moment to, you know, coming out of law school and then clerking and then going to the law firms, that was really a great groundwork for being able to do this. And sometimes, you know, even entrepreneurs learn it's hard kind of going in launching a business. But when you've worked your career, which you've had a career, at some point you have all these skills, you've accumulated all these skills, and now, as you said, you start thinking, what else can I do? And having all of that experience has actually opened up this opportunity for you.
Yeah, I think in a large way that's correct. I mean, it's not impossible, I suppose, for students coming out of school to create something like this, but they don't teach you a lot in law school about running a business. So, and you know, relationships are key in so many types of businesses, including in the law, and it takes time to build those relationships. So yes, there's no doubt that history has been helpful as I've embarked upon this new venture.
Yeah, that's great. So what types of questions might entities have when first exploring their options to starting a business or nonprofit endeavor? Let's kind of set the stage in this first part of the show. What kind of questions might they have?
Okay, so for nonprofits, a lot of what I do is helping them start a nonprofit. And when people come to me to start a nonprofit, you know, there's the technical things that need to be done. So if you're going to form a nonprofit, you have to form a Pennsylvania nonprofit corporation. If you want it to be tax exempt, a 501c3 charity, like most of us think of these organizations, you have to go through the process with the IRS to get exempt status. You may want to get exempt status with the state for sales tax purposes. You may have exemption for real estate purposes as an issue if you own property. And you also, depending on what kind of fundraising you're going to do, you may need to register with the Pennsylvania Charitable Solicitation Office. And so there are lots of different things that may need to be done. And those are just kind of external things. You also have to think about your internal structure and your bylaws and your board and your governance and your officers and things like that.
So just let me interrupt for a second. I'm guessing that people probably actually don't know what kind of questions to ask, because the list that you just went through, someone who has this vision, this dream to start a nonprofit to help people or whatever that nonprofit might be, that might be all they're thinking about. They may not be thinking about those questions you just mentioned. So I would say the first question is, what question should I be asking? Maybe?
Right. Well, and so, you know, somebody like myself who has training in the tax exempt world and the nonprofit world can help people who are trying to create nonprofit organizations with those issues, kinds of issues that I just described. I also try to have a conversation about what I consider sort of fundamental prior issues to that, which include things like, are you sure you're up to the task of doing this? Because there's a significant investment of time, money, and other resources, whether they're personal or sort of community resources, that are required to create something that's going to be effective and to sustain an organization that's going to be effective. Mm-hmm. What I don't like to see is people form nonprofits and then have them fizzle out in 6 months or a year or 2 years because they weren't prepared for the kind of effort that was going to be required to get it up and running. And that's a complicated analysis, because you sort of, just like any kind of for-profit business, you have to have kind of a business plan about, you know, what activities you're going to be engaged in, where is the money going to come from to enable you to do it, is there funding available for what you want to do, can you bring together a community board that's going to support what you're doing and provide the sort of human capital resources that you need to make it effective. And I also, you know, try to get people to think about, are there other organizations in the field already? Are there other nonprofits that are doing the same or similar work that you could perhaps attach yourself and your idea to, because, you know, sometimes that's going to be more effective and more efficient than creating your own separate structure that sometimes might end up competing with those same organizations for funding or for place in the marketplace. And so, you know, we try to have those conversations, and it's difficult sometimes because people are so impassioned about the good that they want to do. And, you know, sometimes it's driven from very personal experiences when they've lost a loved one or something like that that's really motivated them to take this up. And to try to get them to think sort of more calculated about where they're going is not always an easy thing to do.
Well, you touched on a couple of things I want to come back to after we get back from our first break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking with Attorney Mark Arend from the Greater Good and to legal considerations for affordable legal considerations for nonprofits and small businesses. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2018, WDIY is celebrating 23 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support, and we couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. I have with me this evening Attorney Mark Arend from the Greater Good. Well, it's just Greater Good. The website is greatergoodlegal.com, and we are talking about accessible legal considerations for small businesses and nonprofits. And if you have questions, you can talk to us live on air. We are live tonight, or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. You can give your question to Lori C. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. So, Mark, right before the break, we were talking about, you know, what types of questions might entities have, you know, when they're trying to explore their options. And we're starting with nonprofits. We are going to talk about small businesses as we go through the show as well. But as you were going through and talking about what probably would not be complicated to you, but probably or could be complicated to the, you know, general public. They are impassioned, they have a vision, they want to set up a nonprofit, and they don't realize all the questions that they actually really need to ask. And you had mentioned something about the funding, and I know that there is some complications that you can't really self-fund your own nonprofit. There could be some issues that you've got to navigate certain rules, laws, regulations, whatever it might be. So this is really not something someone should probably try to step into without some experience.
Well, it's certainly helpful to get professional advice. Yeah. And what I think you're referring to is there are different categories of nonprofit organizations under the tax code. So and there are different categories within categories, of course, because it's the tax code. So there are tax-exempt organizations that are not sort of the traditional charities that we know of, 501c3s, so they're 501c4s and 501c6s and all that kind of stuff. But even within 501c3, they're separate categories. So if you know, get most of your funding from one source and you don't get it from sort of a broader set of the community, yes, you might be characterized or classified as a private foundation rather than a public charity, which can impact on how you have to operate and the rules that you're subject to. So, yes, if you know, depending on what you're planning and how you set things up, there can be considerable complications to work through and make sure you're doing it correctly.
So you had also mentioned something about, you know, staffing, because sometimes, again, you might start it up yourself and you might say, well, I'm going to dedicate myself full time to this. Maybe you think you're going to pay yourself, Maybe you are going to have staff. There could be complications with that as well.
Well, and you know, if you are desiring to be a public charity, it's important that you be able to show the IRS that you have community support for what you're doing. And one of the things that they'll be looking for in that respect is to have a board of directors for the organization that is composed of members of the community. And that you know, generally means not you only, generally means not you and your son and your brother only. Generally, it means, you know, people from the community at large who are engaged with the activities that you're engaged in supportive of the mission that you have for the community.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking as you were talking, and there might be times where someone ventured into this and then need to wind it down as well. Maybe it ran its course. Maybe that family member who had that mission, you know, has passed on or whatever, and it's done. There would be legal considerations on that side.
Oh, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. And so, I mean, let me say a couple things there. One is, you know, another issue that you sometimes get into with nonprofit organizations is, what is the role of the founder? You know, as we talked about, there's a real emotional commitment a lot of people bring to the table when they form an organization. And, you know, there are issues about how much control that person is going to continue to exercise over the organization for the long haul. And how do you balance that with the role of the board from the community? And, you know, those are dicey issues sometimes for folks. And yes, you know, unless you've developed, you know, what you encourage nonprofit organizations to do is develop sustainability, right? Because if they're truly serving a community need, then you want to have it structured in a way that is sustainable over a long time, and presumably is sustainable even if the person who had the original idea is no longer available to continue to push that idea. Mm-hmm. So you encourage organizations to seek sustainability, and then that, you know, you can frame that in a lot of different ways. Sustainability can have to do with where's your funding and your money stream come from. It can have to do with, you know, where are your volunteers and your board members and all that coming from. And you know, there are a lot of things to think. And it can deal with succession. So, you know, maybe you did have a strong founder, but do you create a succession plan or something like that that enables the organization to continue after that person's no longer available? Having said all that, you know, sometimes they do have to wrap themselves up for a variety of reasons. And yes, there are considerations there. You have to do it the right way because you're a 501c3, a public
organization. You don't take the cash that's left in the bank account,
correct,
for them, so to speak. Right.
Correct. Yeah, so because you're a public charity, there are certain rules that apply in terms of how you can wrap up your operations. And one of those basic principles is that any funds or assets that are left in the organization at the end of the day must go to another 501c3 organization. They can't go into somebody's individual pocket.
Mm-hmm. And I know that we're going to talk a little bit later about small businesses and, you know, the tax aspects of that. But there are tax aspects to nonprofits as well. And I think sometimes people might be under the misconception that, oh, I'm a nonprofit, we don't pay taxes, we don't file tax returns.
Right.
Could you just touch on that for a
minute?
Well,
right. So, you know, if you are if you are tax exempt, so it's not really if you're a nonprofit, because that's a Pennsylvania law description.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's very good. It's a good distinction. I like it.
What matters for tax exempt purposes is whether you're 501c3 federal tax exempt. But assuming you are tax exempt for federal purposes, yeah, that is correct. It doesn't mean you don't necessarily have to report your what's happening with you from a financial point of view. So not all nonprofits have to file 990s, which is the basic tax form for nonprofits, but many of them do. And that largely depends on your income and to some degree on your classification.
And that refers back to what you said, how there's different kinds of nonprofits, and then there's categories even within that. So certain classifications
right,
of nonprofits
right,
may have to file.
Right. And so, for example, religious organizations often typically don't have to file 990s, whereas a normal, quote-unquote, public charity would be required to. Mm-hmm. And then there are more complex technical things like unrelated business income, which is income that's sort of out of the normal stream of income for a tax-exempt organization, which you have to report to. So
folks, if you're thinking about doing a nonprofit or a public charity, 501c3, there's lots of hoops to go through, lots of questions to ask. And as I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive, because you want to make sure you're doing things right. As we continue our discussion, we're at the halfway point. We're going to talk about small businesses as we go through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're not halfway through the show. We're only at 620. I thought I was halfway. We're ready for our next break, though. Thanks, Shanti. Back in a minute, folks.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Mark Arend. We are talking about accessible legal considerations for small businesses and nonprofits. And I just want to mention that there are folks in our community who are interested in setting up nonprofits. I hear about it quite often. And again, these are folks who are very committed to their the mission or the passion that they're trying to follow. So many people might think, oh, you know, you don't see it that often, but we really do. So this is something to think about. And I just want to go back before we continue our discussion on this. And Mark, we can wrap up a little bit more about nonprofits before we move on to small businesses. But I just want to go back to this model that you are this model that you've engaged in now, this Greater Good LLC, because we talked about it at the top of the show, and sometimes people come in, you're really trying to bring affordable legal advice.
Right.
To especially organizations that need it or people that need it who are trying to set up nonprofits. That might be a barrier to them. They might think this is a barrier to entry for them. They wouldn't be able to afford it.
Right. So there are a couple things. Yeah. I think for a lot of startups, and actually we can probably talk about this in a little bit of a broader lens, whether we're talking about nonprofits or for-profits, a lot of startups just don't have a lot of cash and have to be very careful about their expenditures. And you know, also true for small businesses and nonprofits going forward. Oftentimes, even when they've been in operation for a while, their resources are very tight. So what I've tried to create is a opportunity to provide legal services in a way that responds to that need more effectively. So the traditional law firm often works from an hourly fee basis, and those hourly fees are set based on the substantial overhead that most of those firms have. And so what I've tried to do is a couple things. One, I've really made an effort to reduce that overhead so I can keep my costs down and then transfer that on, pass that on to customers/clients, because I think of them as both customers and clients. Mm-hmm. And so that, I hope, is helpful. And what I'm also trying to do is work on alternative fee arrangements. So to the extent that, especially with nonprofits, but also for-profits, you know, it's really helpful to those organizations to be able to set a budget and to be able to say, all right, we need this work done by a lawyer, but it would be really helpful to us to know the maximum amount that that's going to cost. And with hourly rates, you really can't do that because the clock just keeps moving, and you never know quite what your exposure is going to be if you're on the client side of the table. So what I've tried to do is create arrangements where we'll do either flat fees. So, you know, we define what the service is going to be, and then we say that's going to cost X, and then that can be budgeted for. Or we sometimes we'll do an hourly rate up to a certain amount, and then I'll cap it at that amount. So I'll say, you know, if it comes in under that, you get the benefit of that, but it's not going to exceed X.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, those smaller organizations, whether they're nonprofits or for-profits, can budget for that. So they can know what the outside exposure is going to be. And I think that that's very helpful to them. And of course, like I said, without all the overhead, I can really work on reducing the rate. So even when we do end up with an hourly rate, whether it's an hourly rate up to a cap or whether it's just an hourly rate because we're having a hard time getting our hands around the scope of the project, and sometimes that happens, then, you know, I can have significantly lower hourly rates than the standard firm in the Valley.
Well, too, versus a firm in the Valley that may be trying to provide a whole list of services, you're really honing in on helping nonprofits, startups, ongoing, and new businesses.
Small businesses. Right.
And that could be ongoing as well, but really kind of trying to help, because I know later I want to talk a little bit more about your entrepreneurial endeavors and the excitement of working with people who are entrepreneurs. So let's move on to talking about as we go from nonprofits, sometimes nonprofits might become profitable. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because you mentioned a term I had never heard before, something called B entities. But I first want to make sure, number one, folks have the phone number again, 610-758-8810. But are we good on talking about nonprofits? Can we move on?
Yeah, I think we can segue into so one of the things that also that I sometimes talk to people when they come to me about forming nonprofits is, are you sure that you really want to be a nonprofit? Are you sure that you don't want to actually be a for-profit with, you know, other objectives perhaps? And we can talk more about that in a minute. But
okay.
So particularly if the activity that is going to be performed by this organization is revenue generating, then sometimes there's a legitimate question to be asked about whether this really should be a nonprofit or whether it should be a for-profit. And that can be a fairly complex conversation depending on what's involved. And obviously there are some benefits to being for-profit that you can have as a nonprofit, okay, which include things like deductibility of contributions and eligibility for grants from foundations and corporations and things like that. You can do that as a nonprofit, and you can't do that as a for-profit. On the other hand, there are restrictions that nonprofits are subject to that for-profits are not. So, for example, if you know you generate a fair amount of revenue from your activities and you want to distribute that to yourself as the reward for the work that you've done, you can't do that really in a nonprofit context. You can pay yourself a fair wage if you're working, but it all has to be fair market value, and so you can't really get excess revenues.
And there
out.
Is more scrutiny to
yes,
that
yes,
effect that, as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there are sometimes questions to be asked about whether this should be a nonprofit or a for-profit, and I try to raise those if I see them as potential complications.
Yeah.
Because it gets messy. It's not impossible to switch from one to the other, but it gets messy if you haven't picked the right format in the beginning.
Right. And I think when we had talked before, you said sometimes it's like a social justice or something. There's some what might appear to be a nonprofit could actually have still be contributing to society or the community or to that passion that you have.
Right. So yeah, I mean, let's think about it. There are lots of small businesses that we know that are for-profit businesses, but who still engage in a lot of community activities and things that benefit the community. And that can take a lot of different forms.
Mm-hmm.
It can take sort of contributions and sponsorships and things like that, and all kinds of different forms. So it's not impossible to do some meaningful community work, even in the for-profit context. So that's something to consider. You had mentioned B entities.
Because you had mentioned it. And I thought, I've never heard of that before.
So in the last, I don't remember exactly, 2-3 years, B entities became a legal avenue in Pennsylvania.
Okay. And I want to hear more about that real quick when we come back from our halfway point now. So, folks, if you have questions, we're going to be moving into small businesses, and I'm sure people will have questions about that. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. Just call in your question, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 61. On Thursday, high near 72. Thursday night, low around 57. Friday, high near 63. Friday night, cloudy with a low around 53. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 65. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 60. And Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 79. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, I have with me in the studio this evening attorney Mark Arend, and his website is greatergoodlegal.com. He is with Greater Good. We are talking about affordable legal consideration, accessible legal considerations for small businesses and nonprofits. And before we move into talking about small businesses, which I realize I probably spent too much time on the nonprofit, but I love nonprofits. So I want to move to small businesses. Real quick, B entities, because I was the one who brought it up.
The traditional role, And think beyond sort of family-owned businesses. But the traditional role in business entities is that you have to maximize value to shareholders, and you can't really prioritize other considerations. A B entity enables you to sort of co-equally value to the shareholders with other social considerations. Mm-hmm. So you can identify other community support considerations that you will treat as equally important to generating revenue for the shareholders.
Okay.
And there's a whole process around that. It's a separate filing, you know, in the state. There's separate procedures for it. You have to do some annual reports to show the public that you're living up to the commitments that you've made. And anybody who, you know, becomes a part of that company has to understand that that's part of the deal. And, you know, you can specify different public purposes. You don't even have to specify them real precisely. You know, among them can be things like supporting the environment, or you know, getting your vendor product stream or from particular organizations that pass certain tests, or, you know, the way you treat your employees, you can treat them in a different way than maybe the typical way. These are different social considerations that you can add as valuable in your organization. And you know, people try to figure out what that means, and so I try to give examples. So Ben & Jerry's ice cream is a B entity. And Patagonia clothing people are a B entity. And so oftentimes it's you know, organizations that we know of with sort of a really big imprint, but then there are very small organizations that have chosen this path as well.
Wow. Back to the questions you don't even know to ask. I mean, really, this just, it kind of blows up everything. I mean,
yeah.
Questions you don't know to ask. Those are the most important questions. Let's move on to small businesses. Again, the phone number, folks, 610-758-8810. You can call live on air or off air. Just give your question to Lori C. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, your question's too complicated, you can also send it through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and I can forward that on if needed. Small businesses. So let's talk about small businesses. What are some of the considerations there? And we could do a show on probably every kind of small business. So kind of big picture, what are we looking at when we're talking about someone who might be coming in and saying to you, hey, you know what, I've had this idea for a few years. I finally want to do something. What do I need to think about?
Well, I guess the first consideration that usually comes up with me is, you know, what kind of entity, quote unquote, are you going to operate this business as? And, you know, people hear these things, but they don't always understand what they mean. So there are things called sole proprietorships, and there are corporations, and there are LLCs, which is a acronym for limited liability companies, and there are limited partnerships, and there are general partnerships, and, you know, there are all these categories of entity out there that may mean something different from a legal point of view, but for most people it's kind of opaque and they don't really understand what the nuances are.
Mark, I've had people come in and tell me that they're a corporation and they're an LLC. Is it really your corporation?
Right.
And no,
exactly.
They're not.
Yeah.
Limited liability company.
Right. Yeah. So. No, I mean, to the regular layperson, those distinctions don't really mean a lot to them. And they don't want to focus a lot of attention on them, because obviously the important thing to them is their business and making it, getting it up and running and making it profitable and effective at what they're trying to do. So,
but you'll go through that.
Sure. Sure. And it's interesting because, you know, sole proprietorship is sort of the place a lot of people start, because, you know, they want to test their business idea. And, I mean, certainly easier to run things without a formal separate legal entity. You avoid the cost and the, you know, all the aggravation of the paperwork and those kinds of things. But if there's, you know, the trouble with a sole proprietorship is that if there's a problem within the business, then your personal assets are exposed and at risk. And so, you know, as the lawyer in the room, depends on the situation, but, you know, most of us are not too favorably inclined to sole proprietorships because it does make you vulnerable in your personal.
If I'm selling Avon, maybe that's okay. But if I'm building a house for someone,
you know, it's all sort of subject to facts and circumstances. And it is true that to some extent you can protect yourself against the liability risks of a sole proprietorship with insurance. So if you're going to do a sole proprietorship, it's really important that you think carefully about the insurance products you're going to use and how much coverage you're going to have and what kind of coverage. But there's always going to be a significant risk that if a significant incident happens that involves your business activities and your sole proprietorship, that people are going to be able to come after your personal assets.
So structure could be a very important conversation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that is someone who's just going into business themselves, and it could get even more complicated if you are going to bring in other members.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so you know, we talk about sole proprietorship versus the other options, limited liability options, and tend to encourage people to think carefully about the limited liability options. And there are, you know, corporations and LLCs and limited partnerships all have limited liability in terms of what's happening in the business stays in the business and doesn't come back to you personally as long as you follow the right rules and do the right things. So that's kind of the legal perspective. The another perspective, of course, is the tax perspective, which is to say, you know, all of those, from my point of view, all of those types of entities provide you some liability protection, so they're not that much different from each other from a legal point of view. The question that often rules the day in terms of which form of entity you want to be is the tax question, because each of them gets a somewhat different treatment from a tax perspective in terms of, you know, is it on your personal return? Does it have to be a separate return? What deductions can you take within that form that maybe you can't take in one of the other forms? And so I really strongly encourage people, before we make a decision about which form of entity we're going to form them as, to consult with knowledgeable tax advice. Hopefully the accountant that's going to represent the business going forward and work with the people going forward in terms of, you know, which entity would the accountant think would be the better fit for them from a tax point of view.
Right, because sometimes, too, there might be a husband and wife. So when you're looking at the tax entity and even the occupations of a spouse, possibly, that could all come into the liability and the protection and the tax consequences as well. If you have a spouse who's making $600,000 a year, you might want a little more flexibility on your tax status. Or if your spouse is a doctor or
right.
a lawyer.
There are all kinds of considerations yeah. that go into that. And, right. and I'm not a tax attorney. I'm more of a corporate attorney. So
right.
I'm always encouraging people to have the conversations with their tax accountant to make sure that we're going down the right path, because I don't want to just kind of, you know, snap decision, let's make an LLC,
right.
and then we get to the end of the tax year and the account says, why did you do this as an LLC? I really would have preferred that you do it as a corporation or, you know, whatever. And I don't want to make that mistake for the client. I want the client to know up front, which is best from all perspectives.
So it's really a team, because you also mentioned insurance. So you're talking about someone who's helping with the risk management, the tax management, you're handling the legal. Not to mention, though, you're probably having some of those initial conversations with your small business like you were with your nonprofits. Like, are you sure you want to do this, maybe? I mean, I don't know.
Well, sure.
That's
yeah,
true.
No, you always, I mean, yeah, and you don't want to sort of judge the client in terms of, you know, you don't want to act like they don't know what they're doing. But at the same time, you want to test them a little bit to make sure that they've carefully thought through what they're about to embark upon, because it is such a demanding process.
Now, one thing I love working with estates and estate planning and attorneys with in that regard as well. And one of the things sometimes people don't always think about is when you're running a business or you have a business, what happens if something happens to you? So it's even kind of taking it a little step further. Do you encourage them to also do estate planning around this as well?
Oh, yes.
And titling ownership, who's going to take over if something happens?
Yeah, and I, you know, that's kind of a mix of estate planning and some other considerations too, right? So estate planning has a lot to do, you know, with the assets and things like that, but that may or may not be the best way to determine who's going to sort of take over for you from a management point of view. Somebody was just telling me a story the other day about a business that they were aware of that, you know, borrowed a significant amount of money from a bank, built a new building, expanding, you know, everything was going great. But then the principal died out of nowhere, and there had been no preparations made for what would happen if that happened. And, you know, it just, everything ground to a halt. The business collapsed. All the people who worked there lost their jobs. And you know, none of us want to see that happen.
And so, some of that can happen. So you can provide for some certain management provisions, I assume, through some of the estate planning. But if, depending on your business structure, you could also kind of be in front of that in the legal documents that are prepared as well, if you're going in with shareholders or partners.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, so you had mentioned a little earlier, and we didn't really address it. Everything gets much more complicated with a small business if there's more than one owner, right? So you want to make sure, if there's more than one owner, that you've really thought through the relationships internally between the people who have ownership. And, you know, oftentimes I find that people get their entity up and running, they're really focused on the business and making it successful, and they just kind of proceed without ever having hammered out the details of the arrangement between the people who own the business. And that can be really fraught with peril, because the worst time to try to hammer all that stuff out is when you're fighting with each other, right? The best time to figure all that stuff out is in the beginning, when you're all getting along and everybody's, you know, happy
excited
with each other.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, there are documents that lawyers prepare that, you know, specify who owns what share and talk about things like sale, right? So not a nice scenario is you have a partner that you've worked with for 20 years and you don't have any restrictions on resale, and all of a sudden you wake up on day, you know, one of year 21, and your partner sold their interest to somebody else, and you now have a new partner that you never met before, and you know, what do you do? How do you manage that? So, you know, one of the things that we emphasize is you want to place restrictions on sale so that people don't just go out and create a new partner for you
Or one of the partners has done their estate planning with their estate planning lawyer, and they recommended gifting shares
right.
to the kids. Right. And all of a sudden, now you're not just with your longtime buddy, friend, partner. You've got all their kids involved, too.
Right.
Folks, we're coming up on our last break. We're going to continue our discussion with Attorney Mark Arend, talking about small businesses and nonprofits and some of the legal considerations that go around that and providing accessible and affordable services, especially for those folks who are kind of venturing into these endeavors. So if you have questions, there's still plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Attorney Mark Arend of Greater Good Legal Counsel that builds communities, greatergoodlegal.com. And we were talking about kind of some of the questions that people don't always know to ask, but more importantly, that sometimes people feel the cost of perhaps legal advice could be a barrier to entry. And I know, Mark, you're really passionate about entrepreneurs and giving back in the community. So I do want to talk about that as well. So let's quickly recap that, as I mentioned throughout the show a number of times, the questions we don't know to ask. So there are trapdoors that people can fall through if they aren't doing things right. And it is worth working on this ahead of time.
Yeah, and you know, there is inevitably a cost to that, and I understand why people shy away from that. But if you don't get the legal advice that will help guide you, if you don't get the tax advice that will help guide you, if you don't get some other types of advice like from knowledgeable insurance risk assessment people and things like that, it can often come back to haunt you. And so then what you've built, you know, is built on, to use these kinds of analogies, on a shaky foundation and not a strong foundation. And so, you know, building something on a not a strong foundation ultimately doesn't get you where you want to go. So I think it's really difficult sometimes for people to focus on these issues and put the kind of investment into them that is necessary. But I strongly encourage people to do it. And I'd like to think that the alternative that I have developed will help people to be able to do that.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because I know that I think you're excited about being in the community. You're coming out of kind of the corporate structure law firm, so to speak, or partnership, whatever the structure was that you'd been in the past, to kind of revisit helping and how what that help looks like. But when we talked, the passion about helping people in the community and what they can bring to the community through either nonprofit work or through small businesses, because in the end, that in fact, that's we really see it here in the Lehigh Valley. So talk to me about your passion around that.
Well, so, you know, nonprofits, I think I've read recently, are like 10% of our business activity in Pennsylvania. So they're a significant chunk of both, you know, economic activity, employment, all those things. And obviously, and I think we all recognize that small businesses are often the drivers as well in terms of creating employment and opportunity. And one of the things that I would like to really sort of focus attention on is, you know, lots of our communities are struggling. Lots of our smaller communities, whether it's, you know, like the towns up in the Slate Belt or other communities in the Lehigh Valley, are having a difficult time rebuilding their main streets and providing the kinds of opportunities that people need in terms of steady, solid employment that produces wages that you can live on and raise a family on. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that by providing more cost-effective, efficient legal services, I can ultimately help support that development within those communities, I think that would be absolutely wonderful. And that would be how I would want to be able to use my legal talent and knowledge to serve. So I'm hoping that this new approach can encourage people to go and seek out legal advice and create that strong foundation that will sustain their businesses going forward.
And, you know, I've had other guests on the show, attorneys, where we talk about the attorney in the box versus, you know, going to a law firm. The attorney in the box sometimes is like pre-filled forms and things like that. Right. And the caution there is that it's still not specific to your business, your needs. It's not necessarily factoring in all those considerations we talked about earlier about coordinating the legal, the risk management, the estate planning, the tax planning. So that is literally it in a box.
Well, so so that, you know, you can go to LegalZoom and you can pull down the forms and you can form your own LLC. You know, whether you're making the right decision to do the LLC, I think is a little not clear to anybody who doesn't have resources like someone like me to pull upon to help them figure those things out. And the other thing about those services, yes, they're cost, they're cheap, but you don't, you know, it is cookie cutter, and you know, you don't have a relationship on an ongoing basis with a professional who can learn about your business and your particular specific individual circumstances and help you navigate the decisions that you make. You know, what I hope to be able to do and have done in the past, you build relationships with the people that you're working with, and you get to know them, and you get to know their businesses, and you get to know what is important to them. And you're much better able to give them good advice if you have an ongoing relationship.
And I want to talk about your experience with working with some of these entrepreneurs, which you had, you know, in our previous conversation, you had talked about surrounding yourself with other folks who are, you know, startups or businesses. But I do want to mention that Bill from Bethlehem called in. Thank you, Bill, for calling in. And he has just a comment, and he said he totally agrees with the comment about hammering out the details in the beginning when all the parties are calm. So I'm thinking he must have had some experience to be able to
not doing it that way. Yes.
So you know, being proactive again is, you know, one of the reasons we have this show and try to bring this information to our listening audience so they could be in front of their decisions, because I have too often seen people coming to me after the fact, and then when it's reactive, we absolutely do not have as many options, if any options at all. So, I mean, I'm all about educating people and trying to get people on the front of this, being proactive. But you yourself really ventured into this. You're entrepreneurial yourself, coming from that traditional law firm to doing this on your own. And I think you even have now a whole new lens.
I think into this. Right. So I think a couple of things based on personal experience. So I have served on a number of boards of nonprofit organizations, and I've served on the board of the PANO, which is the Pennsylvania Association of Nonprofit Organizations. And I think having sat in those chairs really helps me to be a more effective lawyer for nonprofits, because I've experienced it from the inside as well as from the outside. And now I think the same thing with sort of small business and entrepreneurial ventures, because I've done it myself. I think I have a better understanding of what those folks are working with as they go through the process. And you know, one of the things, well, a couple of things I think that I mentioned to you when we talked before. One is, over the last few years, I've sort of made an effort to engage more, just socially and sort of, you know, passing ideas back and forth and stuff like that with entrepreneurial folks, people who are in that space. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to go out and do your own business and be, you know, form a small business, I think it's really helpful to spend a lot of time with people who are either already in that space or contemplating going into that space, because you get some really interesting perspectives and ideas, and it just kind of opens up your mind from the traditional models that maybe you've been stuck in up to that point. And
that's the creativity, I think, that comes from it too. It's inspiring and it's motivating. And I spoke with a representative recently from Lehigh Valley Score, and we're going to have them on the show probably sometime in June. I don't know if you're familiar with them or have worked with them, but they too are out there offering mentorship and coaching opportunities to people who are thinking about this as well. So that's another avenue for folks who might be considering whether, even before they get to the legal piece of it, does this make sense? There are organizations and groups, and I think Lehigh University has a small business group as well.
They do, yeah. And yes, I think mentoring is very helpful. Another thing I'll say is, when I decided I was going to do this, I sought out other professionals who had sort of done the same thing. So I've sought out an accountant who had left a traditional accounting firm to do his own sort of virtual practice. And I sought out a marketing guy who had left a traditional marketing firm to go out and do his own individual practice. And I encourage people who are thinking about doing this kind of a thing to seek out advisors who are sort of akin to them in terms of how they approach the business. Because if you're kind of innovative and going into new territory, I think sometimes, and no offense to anybody, but sometimes working with professionals who are still in the traditional model, they don't always get what you're doing, and sometimes it makes it a little harder to do what you're trying to do.
Well, you have to be a risk taker to kind of go off on your own a little bit as well.
Yep. And not everybody understands that.
Right. And there was a saying, because I feel like I work for an entrepreneur, Tom Riddle, who we used to joke that he'd have 10 ideas at breakfast time. He'd be implementing like 8 by noon. And, you know, we would be running with 4 of them by the end of the day.
Right.
And it's sometimes a little crazy.
So I think I may have mentioned this to you when we talked before. Some of the characteristics that I think are typical of entrepreneurs is they have a plan A, they have a plan B, they have a plan C, they have a plan. I mean, they have lots of different ideas, and oftentimes they have backup ideas. So if the first one doesn't work, well, then maybe we should adjust to this, and then maybe we shift to that. And one of the I think key attributes of a good entrepreneur is not being stuck to a particular idea. Being able to be flexible, being able to be responsive. You know, sometimes you fall in love with an idea, but ultimately the marketplace tells you that it's not quite right, and you got to be able to let that go and move on. And the good entrepreneurs are able to do that.
Yeah, and embrace that creativity. But at the same time, I think what we've learned from our conversation today is embrace that creativity, that mission, that passion, but you have to have a level of discipline as well. And that discipline is taking the time to kind of rein in that, you know, all systems go kind of mentality to say, we want to make sure the systems keep going. So let's be in front of it.
Yeah.
Mark, we just have a couple minutes. What are your parting thoughts?
Well, we didn't really get into this at all, but another thing that I find some new organizations don't think enough about is something like an intellectual property. And for some organizations, that's really key. That's fundamental to the value of the business. And I'm not an intellectual property lawyer, but I help people find intellectual property lawyers. And a lot of people aren't thinking about things like copyrights and trademarks and, patents and things like that.
Well, I'm going to throw in research and development. Tax credits too, because sometimes they're coming up with new concepts, new ideas, but they may be eligible for research and development.
And those are all important things to protect, because mm-hmm. in some businesses, they're the key assets of the business. And if you don't protect them and you don't think about how to protect them, and you may lose, you know, that opportunity to protect them over the long haul. And that's another place where you have to make that initial, let's build the foundation solidly, or else it's going to come back to haunt us at some point in time.
Mark, thank you so much for being here. So if people want to reach you, your website?
www.greatergoodlegal.com.
Greatergoodlegal.com. And he spells his name A-U-R-A-N-D. I've been saying Arand, and it's A-U-R-A-N-D. I just wanted to point that out in case someone's starting to try to Google you. And
yeah.
They know how to spell your name. So Greater Good. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. This looks like a good service, and the best wishes for you. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Folks, thanks for tuning in. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Lori C., for being here. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. Next week, we're going to review tax season takeaways again. That's right. They just keep coming to me. Reviewing tax season takeaways next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week, and thank you again, Mark. Good night.